Ben, we had a pretty spirited Vlad Jr. discussion in the first segment of the program, and got some texts, and one in particular saying Vladdy's a flash in the pan, and this is basically as good as it's ever going to get. You know, I disagreed with that, obviously, and it's been so completely comprehensively impressive offensively so far from him. I guess what stood out to you so far that's impressed you the most about what he's been able to do at the dish?
Well, I guess the trait that would be hardest to replicate or hardest to find would just be the ability to hit the ball as hard as he is. And you look at the leaderboard for players who have hit the ball 110 miles an hour, which, by the way, to do that even once is impressive. Vladdy's done that 11 times, and next closest, you got a tie between Judge and Stanton at 6. So it tells you he is on another level. He's doing things that other human beings cannot do. And so among many, many traits and moments to choose from, that would be the number one for me.
So, Ben, do you think then that it's fair, because Josh said that if there's a four horsemen, let's say, that we're at least closer to including Vladdy in the conversation with, and again, Josh talked about Ronald Acuna before we brought you on here, and Ronald Acuna was just, he's on fire right now. It's hard to argue otherwise with him as the number one guy, but I mean, in the conversation with him and Soto and Acuna, and I would argue also Otani, based on his production so far this year, I feel like, again, it's hard not to include him in that conversation.
It's interesting. I think at the end of this year, he can be in that conversation. I don't think he's there yet. And I don't think Otani's there yet either, although Otani's closer than Vlad, in my view. I think to do that, to truly belong with Tatis and Soto and Acuna and Trout, I think you've got to do it for more than 2 weeks. So, and that's not to take anything away. Like these 2 weeks, I think, are the best case scenario for Vlad Jr. They have been incredible. He's looked so good. I think Blue Jays fans should be so excited or have reason to be so excited about what Vladdy can do. At the same time, what Acuna's doing, what Soto's doing, like these guys I still think are on another level.
It's fair. You're right. It's a small sample size. My only reason that I think it's close, if not already there in my book, is just because again, it could change, but it just seems like he's reached a point that he hasn't been to before in his development as an offensive player, where it appears to be, for the most part, very, very difficult to get him out. You have to be overpoweringly dominant, and even then it might not matter. We've seen him have good at bats against the likes of Gerrit Cole, or just maybe he's a little bit too aggressive. But I just feel like if he is locked in and focused on what he wants to do, it's going to be really difficult to get him out more often than not. And that to me is something that I think even better than Tatis and Acuna and on the level of Soto puts Vlad and can put Vlad in that same level of offensive terror.
Well, it's true. Like, there are not many players in baseball, and usually it happens, periodically, once or twice a decade, where you have these guys who basically run like a 480 on base percentage for an extended stretch. And so you've got Pujols did that for a while. Bonds, of course, did that. I think he had a 521 OBP 1 year. Joey Votto, of course, has done that. Freddie Freeman, maybe for times, has had OBPs above 400. And we don't know where Vladdy's going to end up, but he's got the potential when you look at the way that he makes contact and the discipline that he's showing for stretches. We know he has the potential to be that kind of player who has an OBP well over 400. And then that's where you get to that feeling that you're describing there, where it's like he's almost as likely to reach base as not, which in baseball, I mean, such a hard game, such good pitching. That's an incredible thing to do.
So one other thing we've been asking people, Ben, is certainly with the injury to Kevin Biggio, and we're kind of, you're trying to rub the crystal ball to find out what the third base situation is going to be like, and it's been a little bit of a changing rotation spot this year, to a degree, certainly. And I think a lot of people, and Rob Wong and I spoke to Kevin Barker last night, and Kevin's pick was Santiago Espinal, and I think that's probably my pick as well, a decent glove, a defensive guy, right? Good arm. But we got some, and Josh was talking about this earlier, we got some people saying, well, why not try Vladdy at third? And I think the ship has sailed to see Vladdy at third. Like, I think based on his production so far this year and the relative comfort level at him at first base, I think I'd prefer to see him stay at first. Like, where do you fall on that issue?
Well, I think you could try him there. I think you could try him. And, you know, it depends, of course, on Biggio first, you know, physically, how he's doing. And then, you know, secondly, how he's doing mentally, how he's feeling with that position and the challenges posed by third base. So, you know, those are a couple of variables to consider. But, you know, let's say that Biggio needs a few days off and they're trying to backfill that position for a while. I mean, you could play Rowdy Tellez at first. You could play Vladdy at third for a couple of games and see what happens. Like, I don't see the harm in that. I think it's not a guarantee. I understand, like, I see your point that he's been looking really good at first, and you want to be careful about you know, messing with his comfort level. But at the same time, he said going into the season he wanted to play third base. That was something that he was motivated to do. It's one of the reasons that he wanted to shed some of that weight. So I think it'd be fine if they wanted to try that.
Ben Nichols-Smith is with us. So switching gears to the pitching situation, and we'll get to the rotation rejigging for tomorrow and going forward. But I want to look back on Anthony Kay's start last night, and I thought he was a little bit unlucky. You know, a few balls found barrels, but he got BABIPed a little bit, a few really tough balls that just sort of found weird spots and ended up as base hits. Would you expect he'll get another turn through the rotation next time around? Or do you think that maybe the four lefties in the rotation might work against him? How do you think the Jays will approach Kay the next time around?
I think four lefties is fine if they're all good. And certainly they've got one ace lefty. They've got Mats and Ray who are pitching pretty well. So I think if you have a fourth guy who's your best option, that's fine. So I don't think that should or would pose an obstacle for the Jays or for Anthony Kay. And I agree. I think he looked probably better last night than his line would suggest. I don't think it was a great start by any means, but I don't think it was a disaster. So I think depending on when they need arms, of course, you got the doubleheader. Then you've got, you know, two off days next week, two off days the week after that. So they aren't going to need quite as many starting pitchers, and they're clearly not going to be in a rush to, you know, make sure that Anthony Kay is starting at all costs or anything. But I think if they have a day come up or someone else goes down, he's a viable option to be in that mix.
Okay, so Ben, I got to ask you about Tanner Roark. We saw the first action for Roark out of the pen last night. And his very first appearance last night, the first couple of innings, the first inning alone, I should say, was not great, right? The lead ballooned a little bit, and I think a lot of people were getting the pitchfork sharpened a little more. But then, you know what? He comes back out, and him and the rest of the bullpen, you know, they retired, what, 11 straight? Roark retiring 8 straight, I think, on his own. And I guess that might have settled things down a little bit, combined with the kind of mini comeback there, the Jays scoring 5 runs after the Royals scored their 7. And I just, with Roark, I guess that's what you hope for, right? It's just, I'm not sure I'm still entirely sold on him being used in very high leverage moments. Like, it really does seem like he is going to take that Tommy Malone role, and I know Malone's going to be a starter tomorrow, but he's going to take that Malone role of being used in the mop-up action, whether it's a blowout, good or bad, essentially, right? So I just wanted to get your quick diagnosis of Tanner Roark after a little bit of a shaky start, and then he kind of cleaned it up towards the end.
Yeah, I think that's a fine role for him. I think that's a really good role for him. He's able to get out to the major leagues. We know that. He's also going to allow some runs. We've seen that in the course of the last year and a bit with the Jays. So I don't think you're in a hurry to add him back to the rotation, but if you're up 6 or down 6, I see no problem with using him. The bigger problem that I see on this pitching staff right now is, you know, and this is partly a product of the doubleheader, of course, but you don't really want Tommy Malone starting a game for you if you can avoid it. And that's where they are. And I mean, it's a run of a lot of games in a row. And I guess they like what they've seen from Malone. And I presume as well that he's not going to be out there for 5 innings. Like, he's probably pitching 2 1/3, but it's still a guy who's throwing 84 miles an hour.
Well, so there's a lot certainly about Roark that I can't see how you mentioned whether you're up or down 6, that's probably the situation to use Tanner Roark. How is that a palatable scenario where he makes $12 million and realistically the only situation that most people and potentially the Blue Jays brass is comfortable using him is in a blowout situation? Is that something you think can sustain for the medium term, or if that is where they view him, is it only a matter of time before a more difficult conversation might be had as far as, you know, his place on the roster and a potential DFA?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? Like, I don't think he's the worst pitcher on this staff, right? As much as he's easy to pick on, and partly because he makes so much money, like, I think there are guys that you could part with before you part with Tanner Roark, because he does give you that length, and you need someone who's your extra innings guy, who's your down by six guy, or your up by six guy. Like, you need that role to be filled. And, you know, like him or not, and he's certainly not the most exciting pitcher at this point in his career, but he fills a role. So I don't think that we're at the point now of talking about moving him off the roster. That could obviously come. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that comes in a month or whenever that point is. It wouldn't be shocking. But I don't really think the money comes into play here, because it is what it is. The money's a sunk cost. It's obviously not ideal. And in hindsight, that's an investment that just, in all likelihood, is not going to work out for the Blue Jays, you know, barring some sort of late season resurgence right here from Tanner Roark, which I'm sure they would welcome. But it just is what it is. They've just got to pick the best players, regardless of what their contract status is. They've got to pick the best players to help them win games.
Well, one guy, Ben, that has been, you know, certainly, I think the expectations were relatively low, and he has certainly exceeded them, Steven Matz, right? And I think before Robbie Ray returned, you could probably make the argument, and I certainly was, making the argument that Steven Matz was probably the second most important pitcher on the roster after the series against the Rangers. And then, you know, he comes out and he plays pretty well in his second start. And now, I mean, we were supposed to watch him tonight. We'll get to see him tomorrow afternoon. Steven Matz has been, maybe a revelation might be certainly a strong word, but certainly has been very encouraging for a fan base and for a team that has seen so many arms go to the IL, right? I mean, like looking at this game against the Royals tomorrow, I feel like my expectations have been raised to be pretty high for Steven Matz going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty fair. I mean, the first two starts of his Blue Jays career have been great. He's looking really good. And, you know, it's not just the results, but he's throwing harder, he's locating his pitches in the strike zone. I mean, that's a good combination, and you can see why he was a well-regarded member of the Mets pitching staff for a long time before a really rough 2020 season and ultimately that trade that brought him to Toronto. So I'm intrigued to see what he can do. I think that my expectations for Steven Matz have changed in the course of the last few weeks, because he was pitching well in spring training, but I had a hard time believing it in spring. And now that you see it in games that matter, I agree. Going into tomorrow, I mean, it's hard not to have raised expectations for what Matz brings.
Ben Nicholson-Smith is with us. So Ryu is bought a couple of extra days rest with the rain out and then the off day on Monday. So he's going to have basically a full week between starts, between last Tuesday's jam against the Yankees and what could be a pretty important series, even a quick one too, against the surging first place Red Sox at Fenway. The schedule is pretty forgiving the next couple of weeks with two off days in subsequent weeks. But going forward, do you think the Jays will look at every available opportunity if they can to buy Ryu that extra day of rest, knowing that he's on the record as saying that at times and more often than not, he's more comfortable with an extra day's rest, and generally speaking, he's more effective with that extra day of rest?
Yeah, I think we will see that, and I certainly think we should see that, because if that's what's more comfortable for him, then you've got to resist the temptation to just roll him out there every 5 days and quote unquote maximize what you can get for him, because that, in my opinion, is just really short-term thinking. And the goal here for Ryu isn't, okay, how can we win this series against the Royals, or how can we make sure that he gets to 180 or 200 innings this season? That's not the goal. The goal, and I mean, people might laugh when they hear this, but the goal the Blue Jays state for themselves is to win the World Series. So, okay, if you're trying to win the World Series, you probably need Hyunjin Ryu pitching two games in the World Series. You probably need him pitching two games in the ALCS. You definitely need him healthy. It's really hard for me to imagine, at least, this team doing anything without Ryu being healthy on October 1st when the playoffs start. So that means you've got to make sure that he gets there. And that requires a little bit of extra patience. It might require starting Tommy Malone and when you don't necessarily really want to, but that's the trade-off, and I think it's the right one for the Blue Jays to be making.